Maybe I'll be happy in New Orleans. Maybe I'll be happy in a castle with Maxine.
Maybe I'll be happy if I shoot my hand. Freedom Fiends. Go for it, Megan.
This is the Freedom Fiends broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep the sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Can you feel it? Is it working, Nima Vedati? Is it working, Ben Stone?
It's working!
It's working for me. Nima, you're still pretty low on volume. If you could,
I was far away so that I didn't blow out your eardrums. Not better now.
Yeah, you could even come up a little bit more.
Yeah. Okay. The locus coeruleus was overflowing, so I didn't want to inoculate you guys with all my energy.
Yeah, a little bit more, a little higher still.
A little more. Jeez. Wow. You guys want me loud.
Just, yeah. Just keep going louder.
Give it your all.
Louder.
America wants to hear Nima Vedati.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you. I can hear you.
Okay, we'll go with that.
We're ultimate professionals doing a sound check live on radio.
That's what the Fiends was built on, right?
Yeah.
It's
a teaching hospital. So.
You know, and Speaking of which, Nima, having you on the show today, I want to thank you for sitting down with Michael and inventing this thing called Freedom Fiends and giving it to us. I mean, this is a very nice gift you've given to humanity. I appreciate it.
I want to thank y'all. I think it's amazing, especially after I left. You know, me and Michael had the conversation when I told him I wasn't going to be able to do the Fiends anymore because I needed to spend the time taking care of my family and building our finances was really what it was about. And he said, you know, do you mind if I continue the show? And I said, dude, definitely. And he said, do you mind if I call it the Freedom Fiends? I'm like, yeah, I wouldn't have it any other way. And I am just blown away by what it's grown into and how all the fiends out there that loved the show became the show. It's so amazing. And listening to you guys whenever Stitcher throws me a new Fiends episode, it almost brings a little tear to my eye. So I want to thank y'all.
Aww. Man, well, it's an honor to finally host with you, Nima. So this is great.
Yeah, it's my honor, MK. You're the ultra.
Thanks.
Megan, you want to go ahead and do the thing on BitCot no gov?
Absolutely. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BitCot no government license, and this allows reuse by anyone except governments. You can learn more at BitCot.org.
Yeah.
So check that out.
And that is us thumbing cool our stuff. Nose at the government, laughing at them.
Neener, neener, neener.
Neener, neener, neener. Okay, that's great. So, Ben, I saw your tweet yesterday. I was setting up for a wedding, so I didn't get to listen. But you were talking with Davi about ANCOMS, I think is what you tweeted.
Oh, yeah. That was on Saturday a week ago show. And you can get that on the Freedom Fiends website. It's still there. But, we were talking about ANCOMS. Actually, this is not a bad topic to bring back up. You were kind of on that side, weren't you, Megan, on the leftist side at one point in
time?
Yeah.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I even got into ANCOM stuff for a bit there. I found it pretty interesting. But yeah, it's I kind of moved away from that, and I wouldn't even say I moved necessarily further to the right. I was an ANCAP for a while, I guess you could say. But now I'm just kind of no labels anarchist. I think I'm probably pretty centrist on most things. I'm neither right or left. So I kind of have fun with that because I can annoy both sides, the ANCAPs and the ANCOMs. So I like to get in there and kind of mess with both of them a little bit. But I came from more of the political left. I had planned to vote Democrat in 2008, but ended up finding Ron Paul before that, which was good because I probably would have voted for Obama or something. But I just couldn't get behind him because I would listen to his speeches and stuff and the other candidates too, and they weren't really saying anything. I would listen and I'd be like, well, I want to support these guys based on their positions, like specifically the anti-war positions. That's mostly what I was focused on. And they weren't really saying anything substantive. So then a friend of mine introduced me to Ron Paul. He showed me a few of his videos, and I was like, wow, this guy's actually saying something, unlike a lot of other politicians. So that kind of got me on the libertarian path.
The war thing is such a deal breaker for me, and I wish it was a deal breaker for more people. I saw Rand Paul. His slogan, right, is, you know, destroy the Washington machine. And then he gives his foreign policy speech in front of an aircraft carrier.
Like,
how does he not get the irony there? I can see how he probably gets the irony and doesn't care. But how do his followers not get the irony?
I think they just block a lot of it out. It's just so weird to see them championing him as some kind of anti-war, even anti-drone. He's selling those Don't Drone Me Bro shirts. Right. And it's like he basically argued that people who were, you know, petty shoplifters should be hunted down with drones. I mean, that's an insane use of drones, okay? Yeah. You know, I'm okay with drones delivering my packages, but... Right.
And that was during his famous anti-drone speech too. Like the ones that the speech that people point to when they say, "See, that's his anti-drone position." Is didn't he say like in the case of somebody robbing a bank, I would think a useful use of drones would be the FBI using drones to go after that guy.
I think he said liquor store.
Liquor store.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
Oh, that's right. Different,
I think
though.
It was a liquor store.
Oh, it's okay if you kill the guy coming out of the liquor store. That's perfectly fine. We don't want to kill the bank robbers, but those dirty guys who rob liquor stores, they just fry them in the streets. Who cares about them?
I mean, imagine how many, you know, blunts or cases of alcohol you could run off with. I mean, these people are dangerous, and they need to be droned. And the people around them, you know, if they get hit by the drones, I mean, it's just collateral. You know,
well, that's
damage.
What they get for hanging out at a dirty place like a liquor store anyway. They're probably
who
guilty.
Who would do such a thing? Probably.
Oh, man.
So, MK, what do you say to annoy ANCAPs? If you're no label, you'd like to annoy both the ANCOMs and the ANCAPs.
Writes articles calling them libertarian welfare queens.
Yes. That would be one way. Yeah, the libertarian welfare queens thing got so out of hand. I was not expecting it to really blow up that much. But I kind of poke fun at the libertarian welfare queens thing because I'm all for donations. Don't get me wrong. I'm very much for people taking donations. But I think that if you're only source of income is donations and you're starting to falter and you're not able to pay your bills and you keep begging for more donations, that's a clear sign that the market has spoken, that what you're producing is not very valuable to your audience. So maybe you should do something else. And, you know, sometimes I like to, you know, try to discuss, you know, hashing out maybe different ideas of property too. That's not really as inflammatory as calling them welfare queens, though, because I really think that they are. I mean, you're living off of the donations of other people to, you know, live this lifestyle where you're not really working that hard. I mean, I can write blog articles. Like, I can write a lot, you know, of articles and things like that. It's something I like doing. But I don't think of it as, like, hard work that I'm, like, sacrificing my life for liberty like some of these other writers do. It is work, but it's not work in the traditional sense. I don't think of it as hard labor at all. You know, I don't think of them as being persecuted either. I really don't like the persecution mindset that some ANCAPs seem to have. And you see it on ANCOMs too, but a lot of ANCAPs, especially when the Libertarian Welfare Queens thing came out, a lot of people projected themselves onto that. I got a lot of hate from people who thought I was talking about them when I really wasn't, but it was kind of a good way to, like, sort people, flesh that out. It's like, okay, you have a guilty conscience, you know, maybe you are engaging in some libertarian welfare queenism, or at least doubting your own effectiveness at activism, which I think is a good thing. You should be constantly reevaluating and questioning if the activism you're doing is effective in making change. I'm not against activism, I'm not against donations, but yeah, you need to be questioning whether or not it's useful and valuable.
There was a kind of a thing that happened when you wrote that article, or when you released that article, that has happened, you know, with me so many times. It's just, it almost becomes a comedic routine that I expect, you know, it to happen. I wait for it, and yeah, there it is. Now I get my laugh. But it's where people hear, they don't hear what you're saying. They hear what they expect to hear. And then they get
angry.
You know, and like with your article on that, you weren't saying, as you've already pointed out, and as I've said many times in reference to that article, you weren't saying it's bad to take donations. You weren't saying it's bad to give donations. Right. Basically, what you were saying is where the problem comes in is when you take on the mentality that you earned it or you deserve it and people need, you know, people owe you, mm-hmm. It's kind of like with some people who are on regular welfare and they feel like there's a word for it where they feel like the society owes them that payment.
Entitlement.
Entitlement. That's the exact word.
They're
I think there's so many libertarians that are these big personality libertarians that feel a sense of entitlement. And if you touch their magic balloon of entitlement, you know, it's like, don't touch that. It might pop. And they get really bent out of shape. And I'll just say it to any of them. You haven't earned, you're not entitled to anything. You know, you're entitled to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And that's it. Now go and do it. Make it happen. Nobody else has to do that for you.
That's right. The world owes you nothing.
Yeah.
You know, like it's going to be a struggle. It's going to be difficult to live in the real world. And it's great if you can support yourself with something you love doing. I think everyone should follow their dreams and follow what they love doing. If activism is fulfilling to them and they can make a living doing that, that's right. Or even if they struggle and they can't make a living. I do know other anarchists who, they're just barely scraping by, but they're happy anyway because they're doing what they love to do. And I think that's great. It doesn't always have to be about making money, but ANCAPs tend to be more focused on making money for obvious reasons. You know, the cap is capitalism, so nothing wrong with making money, but if you're an ANCAP and you're not a very good capitalist, you know, maybe there's some consistency issues there.
Tone is really important too, because I can think exactly of who you're talking about, the people who feel entitled and say as such on their shows, but there's also people like Scott Horton who say, who also sell ads and aren't dependent on donations, but will spend 5 minutes saying how important the donations are, but they'll say stuff like, I get a donation for 5 cents, and I don't care, man. I'm so happy to accept it and thank everybody who donates because it keeps the show going. So it's a tone, too, I think.
Same here. Yeah, worms.
Stick with us. We're going to go to the market, and we'll be right back.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
LRN.FM needs your help getting our satellite signal back on in Africa. Our satellite provider had us on at no charge from 2012 through February of this year when they pulled the channel off the air. Now we're trying to raise $22,000 to continue reaching people with the message of liberty in places where it's needed most. Please visit our Indiegogo fundraiser at africa.lrn.fm. Give what you can and share the link with your friends. africa.lrn.fm.
Oh. I've still got plenty of room. Here.
Freedom Fiend. Back from the market. Shoving truth in your ear hole.
Are you going to pump me up, Ben? I still got plenty of room. I'm at like, my knob can go way higher if you need it to.
Yeah, go ahead and give me a little bit more volume.
Okay. More volume. Louder, louder, louder.
Louder. A little bit more.
Louder, louder. Louder, louder.
That's good.
Louder. That's good? Okay. Shout.
So during the break, right. During the break, we were talking about people who deserve money, not entitlement, but they work hard. People like Will Grigg and Scott. You mentioned Scott Horton before the break, Nima. Mm-hmm. But those guys work their butts off. You know, they earn a living doing this kind of stuff. And we have no problems with that whatsoever, ever. Jeffrey Tucker is another one. You know, Jeffrey, you might not agree with everything Jeffrey says. I don't agree. I like Jeffrey. He's a friend. I consider him a friend. He's eaten dinner in my house, and you know, I love the guy, but we don't agree on everything. But Jeffrey works his butt off to do what he does. Yeah. And he is constantly readjusting his methods and constantly readjusting the product that he's putting out because he understands capitalism and he understands that's how you're supposed to do it.
Angela right. Keaton is another yeah, one yeah. that I would say I have not ever seen her not working. I mean, I've roomed with her at conferences, and I mean, she is just working constantly all the time. And antiwar.com is just such a wonderful resource, you know, because there doesn't seem to be a lot of – we were talking about Rand Paul earlier, and it's like, where's the anti-war – libertarians. A lot of people criticize, like, oh, there's no anti-war left. Well, there's no anti-war libertarians that are as vocal. At least it doesn't seem like they're being as vocal this time around. But, you know, antiwar.com is still trucking along after being attacked by the FBI and Google, too. Like, they're yeah. actually being attacked because they're effective. And this is a thing to look out for in activism is if you're not really being attacked by these big entities, I mean, are you as much of a threat as you may think you are? Like, I don't think certain bloggers, for instance, are as much of a threat to the system as they maybe think they are, whereas antiwar.com is being attacked constantly by these entities.
And the attacks on them are a lot more deep than just what we see on the surface. For instance, I donated to Scott Horton a little bit last year. I mean, nothing to speak of too much, but I was thinking about reporting it in the donation section of my tax return, and I didn't. Because I know that the antiwar.com and that whole nexus is constantly under attack by Google and the establishment and the FBI of all people.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to risk an audit, you know. And we might donate one of our extra cars this year too. And I told my wife, I'd love to donate it to antiwar.com, but I don't know because that's going to look like a giant chunk that I'm asking for a deduction for donating to antiwar.com. And, you know, I guess I should man up and be a man about it and maybe donate it anyway and then not report it because then at least antiwar.com is getting something they deserve.
Yeah.
But when they're under attack from the establishment. Huh?
Yeah. Well, that you're worried about that because you think it'll draw government attention to you.
The chilling effect.
That, yeah, the chilling effect. And they had the same thing happen when the FBI was looking into them. A lot of their donors backed away, and that's when they started using Bitcoin. And, a lot of people are still kind of, like you said, it's the chilling effect.
Right.
And that's
right.
really
and
unfortunate.
They are indispensable. And I think Tom Woods calls Scott Horton indispensable, and I think he has a mm-hmm. monthly $100 donation he gives to Scott, and he'll donate money in people's names if they want him to.
And Tom Woods is great too. Another
yeah, Tom
he's
Woods
a hard
is great.
Worker.
Great
yeah.
content.
Yeah.
Yep. Yes.
He's a hard worker and he's got five daughters to raise on what he does. So
mm-hmm.
Not that he's entitled to anything, but he does real actual work, and so I wouldn't feel bad about donating to him either.
Mm-hmm. You know,
and all these people are people that don't beg for it. They don't say you're a bad person if you don't donate. They don't say, well, I've changed your life, so you owe me part of it, like some people I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
You know, what they say is, you know, I really appreciate it. It's what keeps the show going. If you like the show, go for it. It really helps out. And I'm going to give you these goodies. Like, this will give you extra goodies, free mm-hmm. downloads and things like that. Or like Free Talk Live. You join their AMP program. It's what, like $4 a month? And you get extra access. It's the freemium model, I guess.
Free Talk Live does a lot of good work, too. You know, I can't remember now. They're on something like over 150 actual radio stations across, you know, and plus their satellite stuff that they've got going on. They do a lot of good work, and it's very important. And that's completely ignoring the personal problems that I have with individuals up there without getting too specific.
Right. I think Mark and Ian do a great job, and they've been at it for a long time. Great.
We're going to slip away to the market again. But we're going to be right back with more Freedom Fiends on the radio.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been using Block It Pocket and I love it. Block It Pocket protects your cell phone, tablet, or laptop from remote tracking and data theft. I've tested it. It works. Put your cell phone inside, call from another phone, and the phone in the Block It Pocket won't ring because all signals in and out are blocked. Avoid calls and texts at the wrong moment. Keep your location private. Protect passports and credit cards. Water-resistant, hand-washable, and stylish in many designs. Go to blockitpocket.com. That's blockitpocket.com.
Ben, what part of the country are you in right now, Ben?
We are back in southern Alabama, not far from the Alabama, Florida, what is that called? Border.
Yeah.
Dropping words.
One of those stupid government things.
Florabama.
Yeah, Florabama is an interesting place, actually. There's like a liquor store called Florabama. I think there's an island out there in that little bay in there or something.
Yeah, it's a big... There's a bar too. It's a pretty popular place.
I saw a commercial for the Alabama coast the other day. It was like one of those tourism board things, and they were like, "Oh, look at all these miles of white sandy beaches and blue water." Is that for real?
It's beautiful. Yeah. It is absolutely beautiful.
I will say Pensacola has some of the nicest beaches around. I mean, they're really nice. So.
And Pensacola, let's say you're in your car in Pensacola, the trip between Pensacola and what's the name of that little town on the it'll come to
Gulf Breeze.
Yeah, right in
Gulf
there,
Breeze. Yeah.
Orange Beach, right along in that area. The drive between Pensacola and there is very very nice. And it's not all there's some like multi-million dollar homes, and there's some huge condos and stuff like this. But there's a lot of that beach that's undeveloped. I guess one of the hurricanes came through at some point. You probably know more about that than I do, MK. But at some point in time, some of the hurricanes have sort of cleaned those beaches up and left the land bare. So there's a lot of undeveloped or underdeveloped beach land right in that area. And I don't know what the pricing is like, but if I had money, I would come down there and buy as much of it as I could afford.
Yeah, it depends on what area you're going towards. So, like, in between the beach towns, there's a lot of kind of undeveloped area. And if you go closer to the Perdido side, which is closer west, it's a lot less expensive to get property than if you're at Pensacola Beach. The prices are really, really high there. It's kind of like prime real estate. And some of the other places, too. But in those in-between spots, you can probably get a pretty good deal. Now, it is living on the beach, so... You know, you kind of, I don't know that I would want to live on the beach. I mean, I've lived through hurricanes here on the mainland, and it's not too bad if you're on the mainland. You can, you know, board up your windows and you'll pretty much be all right depending on where you're at. But if you're on the beach, you pretty much have to evacuate. They can really do some damage, and you're never sure which direction they're going to come until they're finally hitting. I mean, the technology isn't exact. As far as predicting where hurricanes are going to go still. I mean, there's still a lot that meteorology has gotten right as far as that goes, but it is kind of hard to tell where it's going to go. And sometimes they'll turn at the last minute. That's kind of what happened with Katrina, and that's why it was so destructive, is it had been predicted to hit other areas, and at the very end it just kind of turned and went directly towards New Orleans. So that happens, and but I mean, you have a while to prepare. You can see them coming for a long time, and I think hurricanes are kind of easier to survive than something like a tornado, where you know they just come up out of nowhere. There's no predicting them, and they're just ultra destructive.
That's why Ben's situation works out so well, right? I'll just turn around and start driving away.
Yeah, we actually did outrun a tornado. Well, not quite.
Wow.
We were in a place in southern Alabama. This was, I think, 2 years ago. I think so, 2 years ago. And I've been in areas when tornadoes were about to hit, or where tornadoes came really close, and the air gets a certain feeling to it. And that's kind of hard.
Such an old man, Ben.
Yeah.
You can feel it in your knee, right? Tornado's coming.
But you can kind of feel like a, I don't know, it's a scary calmness. And I'll tell you something else.
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Birds go silent, which is a weird thing according to where you're at. And we were in we were in this RV park, a real nice RV park in southern Alabama. And I walked outside, And I felt that, and I knew a storm was coming at us, but I felt that, and I went in and told my wife, we got to go. And she had the same feeling. She could feel it coming too. So we just unhooked the motorhome as fast as we could get it unhooked, slapped everything together, headed down the road to get it, clearly the direction away from where the worst of the storm was coming, thanks to all the modern maps and everything. And we were seeing like giant trash cans flying down the road behind us in the rearview mirrors and stuff, chunks of trees flying behind us and stuff. And it was something hit the motorhome. We never could figure out what hit us or where it impacted or whatever, but it sounded pretty bad. I kind of expected that we lost an air conditioner or something because it hit the roof. But
that's so scary.
It was exciting. Let's put it that way.
Well, it would be fun. Also, I've lived through a few hurricanes here, and when the eye of the hurricane is passing over you, there is that kind of extreme calmness, and you can go out in the eye of the hurricane, and because it's not going to be raining and stuff flying everywhere, it's just super calm and completely silent, and it is that weird, cool, kind of humid feeling. It's very hard to describe, but yeah, everything's just very still, and for that moment it's calm but foreboding at the same time, so you know that the rest is coming back around, you know, once the eye passes. But yeah, a lot of people are like, oh well, you know, hurricane comes, you just board up and you stay in your house for weeks, but you can't actually go outside, and when the eye's passing over, and you know, it's real eerie but kind of cool too.
Texas is NEMA is in Texas, for any listeners that don't know. Texas is in a strange area in the sense that you can have tornadoes almost anywhere in Texas, and you have the wonders of also sometimes getting hit by hurricanes. And now,
that's right.
You also have the lovely world of fracking has maybe brought earthquakes to Texas.
Yeah, wow. You hear rumblings, excuse the pun, every now and then about 3.5, you know, earthquakes and stuff like that. I haven't felt one, but people in town here in Austin say they have. I've never experienced a tornado, but an apartment complex I lived in had one of my neighboring buildings taken out by a tornado when I was at school. So I know the effects. My mom was actually hit pretty bad by Rita, which I think came like right after Katrina. I don't remember the space between them, but they tried to evacuate, and their memory is they got a few miles north on the interstate, which was supposed to be the evacuation route, and then had to park there for about 24 hours. It was so congested.
Wow.
People were running out of gas. They just kind of – everybody was living on the freeway, so they're all just sitting ducks on the freeway for whatever came, flooding or rain or wind or whatever it was.
That's a bad place to be.
Yeah, and it seemed very – I don't know. They say that traffic jams are socialism, road socialism in effect. And I guess hurricane evacuation is kind of similar. You have all these government plans about what's supposed to happen to keep everybody safe, and it ends up making them sit literally on the streets in close quarters with each other for 24 hours at a time.
Wow.
Not a good idea.
And it really depends on where you are, too, whether or not you have to evacuate. A lot of times they'll say, oh, well, you have to evacuate. And if you're in a high enough position, which Pensacola is, I mean, you know, almost at sea level. So there are some very low places here that will flood really, really badly. But if you're in some of the higher places, you're typically going to be all right. If you board up everything and you just take some extra precautions, make sure that maybe you don't have a lot of trees that could come down on your property, you know, towards your house, things like that. There's some precautions you can take. But, you know, in areas where it's not hit as often, like New Orleans wasn't expecting it at all. And a lot of people thought that they would be fine staying. And that wasn't the case because the infrastructure wasn't prepared to handle that kind of storm. And depending on the severity of the storm, yeah, you might want to evacuate, but you're going to want to evacuate sooner than everyone else. It's like, how do you find that time to get out so you don't get stuck on the road? Because that's a terrible place to be. I mean, you're almost better off in a house or something.
Yeah, I'd rather have the comforts of home, and maybe I bought a generator or something and just stick it out.
Generator,
Than be in the middle of a freeway and only have enough gas to, you know, even if you have a full tank, how long is that going to last idling? I guess it can last long enough, but not everybody has a full tank at that time.
Yep.
And maybe the gas stations have run out because everybody went to fill up their generator.
Likely, yeah.
You know, one of the things that people always say, well, you have to have government, otherwise you'll have chaos and people will be killing each other in the streets. And they, you know, they imagine all these scenarios like that. But I've been in really bad weather situations before where the government could not show up and help, period. And people didn't do that. People did not, you know, fall on each other and just consume one another and just rob from each other. And I know
they
helped
each other, right?
Yeah, I know that there are situations like, you know, where a riot can break out in an inner city or someplace like that. But oftentimes these things are sparked by hate, by something that the government was the catalyst to begin with. Not a natural mm-hmm. situation where the people just found themselves, you know, rioting or something. Most of the time, mm-hmm. in my experiences, when you have people in a natural disaster of some kind, their immediate response is to look around and try to help somebody that's worse off in the situation than they are. And that's, you see this over and over and over, because that's what human tendencies are. That's what human nature yeah. is.
And we saw yeah. this after Hurricane Ivan in Pensacola, which was to date one of the most destructive hurricanes. I mean, it really wiped out a lot of Pensacola, and there were a lot of roads that you couldn't drive on. It was very hard to get around. And we had a neighbor staying with us, and a tree had come down on her house. It didn't come all the way through, but it had caused a bunch of leaks. And yeah, after the hurricane passed, all the neighbors came out, and it was like, okay, who has you know, whose cell phones are working? And Southern Link was the only company I think that was working at that time, and I think Nextel was, some of the phones were working there, but they were allowing people to share their cell phones so they mm-hmm. could call family in other states. They were like, what do you have? Do you have enough ice? Do you have enough water? You know, let's clean up some of this mess, because the neighborhood was almost cut off from the road. There were so many trees down everywhere, and like, people just got to work helping each right. other out. It's like, oh, do you need help, you know, cutting something out? Do you need to borrow my chainsaw? Do you need to borrow this? And everyone just came together. I mean, people were like sharing beers and hanging out, helping each other. And
trade immediately kicked in, because it was in everybody's best interest.
Exactly.
To make sure mm-hmm. that, because nobody has everything and nobody can have everything. So
yeah.
if I don't trade with you, you won't trade with me, and I'm worse off and you're worse off. So people instinctively know that, I think.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, and people were instinctively helpful, and you know, they weren't, you know, secluding themselves and hoarding themselves off, because there were a lot of elderly people in the neighborhood too that, you know, people needed to check on, who didn't have a lot of family. So yeah, that instinct kicked in to help each other, and it was a really beautiful thing to see. It was something that sticks out the most about that period of time, because I was really young. I was probably like, I guess I would have been like 12 or 13 or something. And yeah, it was beautiful to see.
That's what people do.
Yeah.
We're going to...
People also go to market.
Yeah.
Right?
We are going to go to market. And then we're going to be back on the Freedom Fiends Radio.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Freedom Fiends. Freedom Fiends. Fiends
freedom
for freedom.
Worms.
Worms. So, Nima, who thought of the name Freedom Fiends? Was that you or was that Michael?
I pitched it, yeah. I don't know why. It alliterated. Fiend is like a thing in you know, hip-hop music and culture. Somebody that really wants something. Usually it's used in a derogatory sense. So like, you're a crack fiend. So mm-hmm. if you're the rapper, you're the drug dealer, and you're serving the fiends, and you're making sure the fiends don't come and chase you and grab your crack and your money. But I thought, you know, fiend, it means addict. It means somebody who really needs something. And I don't know, that's kind of how I felt about freedom at the time. I felt like it was something that we're not supposed to have. The government doesn't want us to have it, but I really, 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 really want it. So Freedom Fiends just kind of fit, and it had a certain ring to it. And Michael liked it, but I had to sell him on it. So we were circling around a few different ideas, and I think his favorite at the time was Freedom Yak or Yakking About Freedom or something like that. It had yak in it, and he wanted to have a yak as the mascot. And, you know, it's funny because now we have Nick who does the narco-yakitalism. And maybe right. If Michael would have said a narco-yakitalism, that could have been the name of the show. If he would have pitched that as the name, maybe we would have said, oh, okay, that's kind of cool sounding. But he didn't. He just it ended up being Freedom Fiends, and we put it out, and that's what we stuck with. But actually, for the first somewhere between 0 and 10 episodes, it was called the Guns and Weed Podcast. Because that was our last project. We had just gotten done with Guns and Weed, and so we almost called it that. But we kind of wanted to split off, and we thought, you know, we have some new ideas, and it's more than just about Guns and Weed, and we want this to be our forum to talk about anything in existence that we can think of in our brain space or in meat space or in web space. And so we had to come up with something more broad, and we came up with Freedom Fiends.
And Guns and Weed, he's referring to there, for our listeners that don't know, that's a movie that Michael and Nima put together called Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom, which is a really good show. I really like that movie.
I really liked it, too. I remember watching it a few years ago, and I was like, this is it. Like, these people get it, guns and weed. Like, not one or the other. It's both. So I think the title was very provocative, and I really liked that. And I mean, yeah. it would make a good name for a radio show, too. I mean, it'd be really edgy. But I like that I really enjoyed the movie, and you guys did a great job on it.
We were so stoked when we found out that gunsandweed.com was not a taken domain name.
Oh, I bet.
That's actually what clinched the title of the movie for us, because we had a bunch of different ideas for the movie title too, and we were on the phone one day and one of us brought up Guns and Weed. I can't remember. And we were like, wait, it should be called Guns and Weed.
Yes.
And you know, the subtitle could be like The Road to Freedom or something. And Michael's like, yeah, that's kind of cool. Let me see if the domain name exists or if somebody already has it. And he looked up gunsandweed.com and it was free. And he was like, it's free, dude. And I was like, whoa, really? That's going to be the name of the movie. And so that's kind of what decided it for us.
And in case somebody doesn't know, that's listening out there, and you're like, "Oh no, the weed!" Oh. Well, what we're basically talking about here.
That was great, Ben. I love that impression.
Oh no! If you outlaw something like a plant, you know, a weed, a plant. I mean, that's what we're talking about. You outlaw that. You are really, you're accomplishing a really stupid thing, which is making a fool of yourself. And that's all you're really doing. You're not going to stop anybody from getting their hands on this illegal substance. And the same processes, the same methods, and the same soldiers, so to speak, that you're going to use to enforce this drug, this war on drugs, the same ones eventually are going to be used in the war against gun ownership. And those same cops that come and bust down your neighbor's door to take them away to jail for possessing a plant will someday be kicking in your door to take your shotgun. And that's how it works.
Yep.
It's just that mm-hmm. simple.
Because really they're both a great example of private property.
Yeah.
And the fact that that should be the ultimate thing we're trying to protect. It's not which kind of property A or B, that we're trying to protect. It's the concept that I own myself, and therefore I own whatever I acquire legitimately. And if you try to take it from me, that means you're doing something illegitimate. Whether it's a piece of metal we call a gun that's just a tool for hurling a rock really fast, or a plant that I grew that I intend to make my mind feel tingly. It doesn't matter what it is. Property is property, and nobody has the right to take it from me unless they pay me first or I tell them they can.
And I think the tide's shifting on the topic of cannabis, too. I think people are coming around to the very common sense notion that it's completely messed up to ruin someone's life over a plant. And this is a good thing. This is the natural trajectory of things. And, you know, it's going to be one of those things people are going to have to accept eventually. And people already are. So it's not going away anytime soon.
Word.
I think we're going to go away sometime soon, but we'll be back here on the Freedom Fiends with plenty of fiendy goodness and gun and weedy goodness, too.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Anti-war, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
It had a full glass of wine dumped into it at Porkfest several years back. It had.
Chris Cantwell do that?
No.
Okay. Sounds like something he would do.
I did that.
You go pour wine in Ben Stone's computer.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Re-Education Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza, on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no-gov license. This allows reuse by anyone except dirty, filthy, stinking governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. That's BIPCOT.org. And that's my
view. You know
view.
Who's stinky?
Who's that?
Obama.
Oh, we forgot to say last.
Mostly his feet, though.
Yeah.
Mostly his feet.
We forgot to say that last
hour.
He's
a liar socialist and his feet stink. Just so anyone's unclear where we stand. I like saying it. Even if I wasn't required, it would still be fun to say, right?
You know, I'll take it a step
further.
I
would think that about any president, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, or
yeah,
anyone who's in office gets the same
treatment. I almost feel like I have this like weird lull, like we're in the eye of the Obama hurricane. Like I don't even feel compelled to to complain about Obama. Like I'm ready to complain about the next president already.
Oh, like Hillary, I'm way more freaked out by her.
Yeah, I feel way more fired up when I'm complaining about Rand Paul than I do Obama.
Or Rand, yeah.
Well, I'll go ahead and say that Rand Paul is a socialist. And his feet stink, and he's a liar, and Hillary is a liar, and she's a socialist, and her feet stink. And I don't want any of those people. You know, here's the thing. I don't have a president, and I won't have a president. There might be somebody who has that title and wants to be, you know, to lord over me, but I won't have it. In my mind, I will not have them, any of them, as my president.
Amen.
And it's, yeah, preach man. And it's crazy how people will still – I've even seen conservatives say this about Obama, being like, well, if you don't respect the man, you at least have to respect the office.
Ugh,
and
that's
it's
what
like,
I don't respect.
What? That's the main part I don't respect. And it's – I mean, I've even seen them say, well, you know, you can criticize him, but don't be, you know, personal about it. And, you know, it's still the office, and you still got to say things like Mr. President. You know, it's like, oh, God.
Nope.
Ben, I don't have to respect anyone.
I can't remember when it was. It was when I first started listening to you, and it was the 2012 elections, and Ron Paul was running again. And I can't remember if you had predicted this, but you said something to the effect of it was either that if Ron wins, it will be because the establishment let him, and they want to hand him the steering wheel of the Titanic as it goes down, so they can blame libertarianism.
Yeah.
Or maybe you said that Rand, if they let Rand win or run in 2016, it'll be the same thing. It'll be so they can blame all the ills of the world on libertarian philosophy. Do you recall something like that?
Yeah, that's what I was saying in 2012 before the election. And the other thing I said was, and this was like in March of 2012, I said, just keep in mind, first off, any primaries that it looks like Ron Paul is winning, they're going to cheat. And he won't win. It goes to
which
the
they did.
Exactly. That's what they did. And I said, when it goes to the convention in Florida, it doesn't matter how much activity takes place in the Ron Paul campaign in that year in 2012. No matter how much support he gets, he will not be allowed to speak on the floor of the convention. And he wasn't. They practically guarded the place to not let him in. You know, it was
or
quite
his
a
supporters.
Spectacle. Yeah. Yeah. They were,
and I mean, they shut down Tampa too. I mean, it was a total police state. I mean, they were patrolling the streets and stuff. You couldn't go certain places. They were barricading protesters. I mean, it was rough down there.
But Ron, unlike Rand, stuck to his principles.
Right.
And he did not water down his message with a drop at all during the campaign. He was the same Ron he was the year before and the year before and since the 80s when he ran as a libertarian. More so, actually, than back then. Rand, on the other hand, the establishment seems to like him, and he seems to like them. I mean, he's had meetings with Bill Kristol and the influential neocons. I don't know if he's officially had meetings with Sheldon Adelson, but it wouldn't surprise me. Hannity has him on. He's one of Hannity's favorites, and he's been playing the Hannity game since he was a senator. So either I don't care whose fault it is, but I think they're going to let Rand get a lot more traction. When you see the Facebook posts from, you know, FreedomWorks or whatever, they have Rand Paul sort of in the foreground, and they might have Rubio on the right or Cruz on the left. But it seems like they're willing to play ball with him. So I wonder if that's one of the reasons. He's the libertarian light or the diet libertarian that they can blame any problems on the fact that he's too libertarian to hold the office.
Yeah, and this is despite him disavowing the term libertarian too. He's like, I don't want the libertarians to claim me. I'm a Republican, and there's a term for this. I can't quite think of it, but it's when the policies of a president come into effect during the next term, during the predecessor's term. For instance, there were a lot of problems under the Bush administration economically due to Clinton's policies, and it didn't really come around until a few years later when Bush was running. So, I mean, Bush is horrible. I mean, a total fascist. But a lot of presidents end up getting blamed for the economic problems that come about as a result of the policies of the former administration. And I think this is what you're going to see if Rand gets far. And I mean, I doubt that he's going to win. I seriously doubt it. I mean, I'd almost be willing to bet money on it. But if he does, I really think there is more to Ben's idea that it's just going to be something to, oh, we'll just blame libertarianism on the problems that the other administration caused. And then there will never, ever, ever be a libertarian candidate. It's already, you know, libertarians make up such a small percentage of the population anyway. They would be easy to scapegoat.
Right.
So,
you know, the Democrats have used a trick over and over throughout the years, and it has worked for them every time. And that is saying that somebody is an outsider. He's outside of the mainstream Washington group. Kennedy was kind of like that. He was running against Nixon. This is like 1960. And Kennedy was running against Nixon. Nixon had been the vice president for 8 years under Eisenhower. And even though the Kennedy, you know, family had been interconnected in politics for a very long time, the people of the nation weren't really acquainted with the Kennedy name. So here you got this young guy, kind of handsome, he's new on the scene, he's very fresh. You hear words like that. He's fresh, he's new, he's unknown, and he comes sweeping in, and everybody has real high expectations. And then it all goes back to the status quo. Once you get rid of that guy, then it goes back to the status quo for a while. And the same thing happened with Carter. Carter, even though he had been governor in the 70s, Carter came out of nowhere. Nobody in the mainstream media had anything. They didn't know about him. He just sort of ex nihilo. He appeared out of the heavens. And he was young. It seems impossible now because he's like 114,000 years old. But at the time, he seemed really young. He had blonde hair, and it was like, wow, this guy is so fresh and new and young and outsider. And then he comes in, and of course, the economy just fell apart, and it was all his fault. Everybody hated him, and that gets, you know, I hate to say it, but lots of right-wing listeners right now are just going to clutch their ears and yell, nah, 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 nah. But really and truly, Reagan was an insider and was the whole time. And his actions prove that, even though his words were a different thing. And then after Bush, you know, you got, Carter phase two? Clinton. So Clinton comes in, and what do you know? Clinton is young at that time. He was young. He's got this really super smart wife that's like the most brilliant person in the world. And they're fresh and they're playing rock and roll music. And he plays the saxophone. Yeah. How can we go wrong? It's new. It's
so
fresh.
Cool.
And that's what Rand is. The Republicans finally figured out the shtick. And that's what Rand is.
After how long?
Yeah.
So this is interesting. It's like they've kind of reversed because, yeah, you have noticed that trend of Democrats to pick someone new and fresh and up and coming. You saw it with Obama too, and it's like the Republicans are finally catching on to this, but is it too late? And are the Democrats going to keep up with this kind of formula too? Because right now there's Hillary, but is anyone going to come out and challenge? She's so not fresh. She's so establishment and so like old school. Like, I'm surprised the Democrats are running there. Do you guys think that there's going to be a challenger?
Though, MK, I think that you're underestimating the power of the female genitalia in this equation.
Well, do you think anyone's going to challenge her? I mean, certainly, I wonder if there's going to be any other female Democratic candidates who are going to come out and challenge her. I don't know that there would be, though.
I can't remember her name. Warren?
Elizabeth Warren. Yeah.
I don't think so. I think she feels she would be doing a disservice, and I don't think they want to divide the people who are going to vote just on the basis of sex. I think that she's right. Probably talked to Hillary about it and said, well, it's your time, Hillary. I'm not going to try to steal your
No, phone. Hillary's talked to her about it and was like, don't do this for me.
You don't want to end up in a gutter. Like,
you know what, right. People challenge me. It'd be a shame if you suicided yourself.
Yeah.
Vince, I'm terrified of Hillary. Gosh, she is. Yeah. She's terrible. She's terrifying.
She's so scary. And people don't get it. They think she's some sweet old lady that's gonna make us all pecan pies and mail them to us instead of a tax return.
Yeah. Ask Vince Foster. Ask Vince Foster what a sweet old lady she is.
Well, right. To get that high in politics,
like a list of all the people, like her former bodyguards that have been offed, and all the people who sort of mysteriously had problems after taking opposing view or stance, or in some way threatening her.
Well, I would think to get that high in politics as a woman, you have to be even more vicious and brutal than your male counterparts. You have to be even more cunning. I will hand it to her; she is an evil genius. I mean, she is very intelligent, and she knows how to play the game. And I mean, she's a pretty formidable opponent. I mean, I think she's completely psychopathic, even. But she's no idiot. She's no idiot, and she knows what she's doing. And that's a freaky thing. But I wonder if people are going to fall for it. I don't know. It'll be a fun. I want to have fun this election year. You know, I think the best thing you do is just poke fun at these people, you know, because you'll drive yourself mad trying to seriously analyze this stuff.
Yeah,
it's true. I'm interested though. Ben's talking about Rand makes me think maybe he is kind of an establishment pick. Maybe he's the fresh face, and you know, there's never any fresh ideas from either the Democrats or Republicans. So they have to all the freshness has to come on the surface, and so maybe they feel like, well, this is the only way we could challenge somebody like Hillary. I don't know. Scott Horton says it's Jeb Bush is a shoo-in, and we might as well just start making fun of the next Jeb Bush presidency. Who knows?
Well, I was saying that in 2012, actually. I said that Jeb's up next as soon as Obama gets his two terms. So,
Jeb. What kind of name for a president is that? Sorry.
It is awful, isn't it?
We're going to be right back. We're going to take off to the market momentarily, but it'll be brief.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Ben Stone with Nima Vedotti and MK Lords. Nima, I'm so happy you're on the show with us today. It is so cool to talk to you.
Me too, man.
OG respect. Fiend.
OG, yeah.
Original Fiend.
You know, one of the things Michael was always amazing at is getting to talk to anybody in the world he wants to talk to.
Isn't
and I remember
the truth?
I had I had no idea who you were, Ben. And Michael, we were on the phone one day chatting about what we were going to do for the next episode. And he said, have you heard this guy, the Bad Quaker? And I said, no. And he's like, I like the way he talks. I was like, okay, good for him, I guess. I started listening. I was like, wow, that's awesome. And then like the next week, like you guys are best friends. And he was like, yeah, I was talking to Ben Stone this morning and blah, 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 blah. And now you're a fiend. It's like, wow, that's it's interesting the way the world works.
Yeah, I remember
the diversity of the fiends.
I remember with Michael, you know, he has these stories like, I was riding across to L.A. in a moving van with the drummer from the Red Hot Chili Peppers when this happened or that happened. He has stories, true stories, that it's true stuff. And it just spits out of his mouth like that in casual conversation. And I think it would blow away the average person. Well, I'll tell you what, most people would just think he's a liar. And he's not. He's telling the truth. He actually lived through all this stuff.
Yeah.
And it comes to pass.
I was just going to say, he just gets it in his head that he wants to be involved in somebody or wants somebody involved in his project. And it happens, you know. If you would have told me when I was a teenager that I'd get to talk to Chris Novoselic, the bassist from Nirvana, when I was growing up, I'd be like, yeah, right. I don't think so. But yeah. Or Brendan Small, the guy who created Metalocalypse, comes on my radio show and then does a Nathan Explosion read of our bumps.
I love those.
Are real. Those aren't impressions.
Yeah. This was back, awesome. I guess, like in the weeks, right around the time frame that Michael got a hold of me. And I was talking to my son and I was like, I'm talking to this guy. His name's Michael Dean. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. And my son's like, no, you know, because I'm his dad. So for him, you know, thinking about me, it's like, that's my dad. I've heard him my whole life. Okay, dad. And so I'm telling him about Michael and I'm like, yeah, and this and that. And he's getting ready to interview Dick Dale in a few days or whatever. And my son's like, wait, Dick Dale doesn't talk to anybody, period. And I'm like, no, Michael can talk to Dick Dale. Michael just calls him on the phone and he'll do an interview. No way. You're kidding. Who is this guy? And it was like, you know, and then my son was like, and you know him? This is a friend of yours? How do you know him?
Right.
it's crazy. But it's a weird world we live in, you know? The internet has made everybody our neighbor, and it's just very strange.
Yeah. And a lot of people are pretty accessible, like, you know, like musicians and stuff, for example, who many people put on a kind of pedestal. It's like, oh, I'll never be able to meet that person. A lot of them are a lot more accessible than you think. You just got to treat them like people, you know, you don't, right. Maybe not like, you don't want to fawn over them too much or stuff. It's hard not to sometimes, but I feel pretty blessed with some of the experiences I've had, you know, getting backstage and meeting some of my musical idols and stuff like that. And it's like, if you just approach them and be like, hey, you want to like hang out and, you know, talk for a little bit and chill.
Tell us a story, MK. Who's the favorite, your favorite musician you've gotten to hang out with?
Oh, God, my favorite. That's really hard. But probably a guy named Zach Deputy. This guy is phenomenal. He is a one-man band, and he uses loops to create these masterpieces. I mean, he just layers stuff on top. Right. And he's an extremely good guitarist. His vocal range is just unlike anything I've ever heard. I mean, from the really low guttural lows to he can do these falsettos that are just amazing. And it's just very good, like funky dance-like music. And probably one of my favorite shows of his I've ever seen. I see him as often as I can, and you can see him for $10. I mean, he totally undercharges for his work. I mean, he's a phenomenal musician. But I was in Mobile, and a lot of people were not in Mobile at the time because they were going to another festival. So he was playing a show. It was like a Saturday night, and like no one else was there. But me and my husband, we were pretty much the only ones in the audience. And so it was kind of like having a private show, and we got to hang out with him backstage in between sets the whole time. And he was just super chill. We got to really know him. And this is someone I had been kind of following for a couple of years at the time. And it was just really great. You really got to know him. He was a really smart guy, very libertarian leaning, was even interested about Bitcoin. I talked to him in another show after that. This would have been, yeah, I guess a couple years even after that. You know, he's kind of interested in Bitcoin and very, very open-minded and very cool guy, very down-to-earth.
What's his name again for people who might have missed it?
Zach Deputy.
Zach.
If you look him up on YouTube or just Google him, he's great. Excellent live.
We'll be right back in just a bit on Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Sorry, boy, this didn't mean to step on you, Ben.
No, that's good. That's fine.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Freedom Fiends. Meow. Tim K. Lords, Nima Vedati, and me, Ben Stone.
We're talking about famous-ish people we've met and we're really, really stoked to meet. What about you guys? Have you ever, whether a musician or even people in Liberty too, anyone that you've ever gotten a chance to spend some time with that you maybe never thought you would or were like, oh man, I have a whole lot of respect for you?
Go ahead, Nima.
I don't know. Probably the most famous musician I talked to that I actually like was probably Tech N9ne, but that's kind of cheating because I was actually a TV reporter and I covered his concert because it was kind of like a hardcore rap concert in Casper, Wyoming. That's kind of weird. but he let us in the tour bus, and me and my friend Mike Mahoney, who was actually not working for the news station anymore. He used to be the weekend anchor and weather guy, but DUI kicked him off, basically, and so that was kind of a bummer. But me and him were hanging out, and we went to the concert, and I was like, yeah, man, tag along. You can come, and we'll shoot the concert, and then we'll go see if we can talk to Tech N9ne. And he let us in his tour bus, and I remember just thinking how normal it was. I mean, it was a tour bus, but it was just probably like Ben's RV, and you know, it was painted real cool on the outside, but inside it was just a normal tour bus. And his wife was there, and he like gave her a kiss and said, I'll be in bed in a little bit, honey," or something like that. And just a normal guy, and he was totally cool and talked to us just like we were normal people. And I just remember thinking at that moment that, yeah, exactly like you said, MK, musicians are just people, you know, they're not gods. They think, they make mistakes, and if you're cool to them, they'll be cool to you, I would mm-hmm. imagine.
Totally.
And Liberty, probably the person I met in person that I had most fun talking to is probably Ernie Hancock. Ernie,
oh, he's a hoot.
Ernie. In person.
He's fun.
Yeah, yeah. In person, he's just like on the radio. He's just full of energy. He's smart. He's witty. And he's willing to sit down and explain any concept to somebody, even if they've never heard it before. Just a real cool guy.
His mind moves about 9,000 miles an hour, too. He is.
And somehow his mouth keeps up with it.
Yeah.
Like,
a lot of people are like that, but their mouth kind of like starts fumbling, but not Ernie. His mouth is like right on board.
And it takes him no time at all to. Yeah, he is. It takes him no time to grasp something. Like, you start to explain something to him, and for me, well, and there's, I've had criticism. Like, my brother used to tell me, or my brother used to say this about me in order to insult me. He would say, never ask Ben what time it is. He'll tell you how to build a clock. And, you know, and I told him, you're not insulting me. That's the truth. I mean, that's how my brain works. And so you start to explain something to Ernie, and I get like a sentence into it, and he's like, gotcha, I got it. No, I got it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's all it takes. Now get out of his way. He'll run with it.
Yeah, right. And he'll summarize it better than you can sometimes, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's just so quick with like explaining things clearly and simply, and that's hard to do. That it takes some work to do that. So
that clock thing is hilarious, Ben, and I think that's why I liked your show when I first started listening to it. Was the time you take to sit there and go over one subject. Like, you get so deep into it, especially when you used to do your Bad Quaker, and you would like, it was really well thought out. It was like reading an article almost, but for my ears.
Yeah.
And I'm usually on the road or I'm working. I always have to be moving, so it's hard for me sometimes to sit down and read something. So I really appreciated your work when you did stuff like that.
Thank you. I appreciate
that. It's good getting to the details.
Yeah, that's kind of how I approach things. I like to take things apart, you know, mentally, or even in, you know, since I was a little kid, give me a toy, I'd figure out how to take it apart, not to break it, but just because I liked disassembly. I like that process. That's a weird thing to say. I like disassembly. But that's entertaining to me. You know, I remember the first engine that I took apart. I was like probably 14 or 15. And my dad had a spare engine, and I was like, can I play with this? And he's like, go for it. And so I just disassembled the thing completely, you know, just and figuring out how, this is how this works, this is how that works. And I could figure out exactly how an internal combustion engine works by disassembling it and looking at it. That's just how my mind works, I suppose.
Nice.
A flaw.
So what about you, Ben? Who have you gotten to meet that you were excited to spend some time with?
You know, outside of the Liberty community, like my claim to fame is standing in line at a grocery store with Johnny Carson, and he's standing there buying beer that was not the brand of beer that he endorsed on TV, which was, I always thought was odd. And he's like a regular guy, no makeup, standing there in short pants and a flowery shirt, you know, a summertime tourist shirt. And just buying beer in a grocery store. It was really strange. California is weird about things like that. But that, you know,
this was Johnny Carson, you said?
Yeah, Johnny Carson. He's
like here's Johnny.
Yeah, that guy. And it was at the peak. This is like 1978, 77 or 78. And I was a teenager. And he's just standing there in line. And I'm like, hey, you're Johnny Carson, aren't you? And I'm like, yeah. It was weird. But in the,
I think I saw Owen Wilson walking his dog when I went to visit Beverly Hills, and his dog was like peeing on a fire hydrant. I was like, see, his dog pees too.
When we lived in Reno, there was a yearly, a big golfing tournament in up right up the hills outside of Reno in Carson, not in Carson City, in I can't remember the name of that beautiful lake that's in the mountains just west of Reno. But anyway, there's a golf tournament up there.
Lake Tahoe?
Yeah, Tahoe.
Yeah.
So there's a golf tournament up there every year. All the stars go to it and former presidents and all kinds of things. And so you'd see those guys in Reno sometimes, you know, big sports stars and celebrities walking around because they're there for that thing. But other than that, I never really pursued any bands or I was never really starstruck. And it's kind of been the same thing in the around liberty-oriented people, too. You know, I've got, like, autographed books from several people, and I didn't really pursue that. And they thought that, you know, they, I'm not really into autographs. And so,
yeah,
you know, it's kind of an awkward thing for me. Whoever that I'm meeting, for them to hand me an autographed book, and I'm kind of like, okay, you know, once I read this, I'm not going to like save it or anything. So, you know, I leave books places sometimes, laundromats and stuff. So, you know, I don't know. I'm not really the starstruck kind of a person, so I guess I don't fit the category very well.
I was standing in line, and I feel like that's always kind of weird too, standing in line to see somebody like after they speak. Like, that's a weird power thing. But I was standing in line to see Stefan Molyneux after his speech at the Texas Bitcoin Conference last year, not the one this year, the 2014 one. And as I got closer, somebody that was also standing in line recognized me and was like, oh, you're Nima from the Freedom Feeds. And like two or three people came and were talking to me. And I was like, this is kind of cool. You know, I don't think this would be remarkable in any other sense except that I'm standing in line to see somebody I see as a celebrity. And then people that think of me as a celebrity start talking to me about my show. And I was like, nice. Oh, that's kind of cool. And then I tried to talk to Stefan and I'm like, hey, man, I just wanted to ask you a few questions on camera. You know, I'm doing this thing and we might put it on the Feeds or whatever. And he was like, no, I've got to go to a lunch. People are paying me for it. I'll talk to you later. I stood in line the whole time to talk to him, and he just kind of said, oh, I got to go. People are paying me to have lunch with them. I was like, okay. Fair enough. Cool.
Well, I think you're saying the starstruck thing. I think the less starstruck you are around people, the easier it is to talk to them and get to know them. Really, because they can tell. I mean, like, you know, it's pretty easy to tell when someone's starstruck by someone. And, I think just, you know, being calm and, like, I mean, I've gotten great interviews from people in the kind of liberty sphere just from starting off almost, you know, just hanging out, and then it turns into a cool interview. And two of my favorites were probably with Patrick Byrne and Cody Wilson. And I was kind of surprised at how long they spent hanging out, just talking. But those are two of my favorite interviews, and just very interesting people with a lot of interesting things to say. I think if you approach it, you know, calmly and just, hey, I just want to like hang out and talk a little bit. So.
Cody is a hoot to talk to anyway. I really enjoy talking to Cody Wilson. He is such a neat person, and his mind, he's got the way his brain works is the way I wish my brain worked. He thinks in the hacker way and in the engineering way at the same time. And there's a lot of crossover brain material there. There's a lot of the thinking is very common among hackers and among engineers. But that's the stuff that fascinates me. I like to be around hackers and engineers, and Cody fits that.
He said something funny after the interview. We were talking, and I found out that he was an English major like I was, and he dropped out of college, and I was telling him the same thing. I was like, oh, yeah, I used to be an English major, and I dropped out because I didn't think it would lead to what I really wanted to do. And he just kind of casually says, he's like, well, you could have invented the 3D gun.
There you go. I've been at two things that I was expecting to see Cody at, but he didn't go. He was supposed to be at Anarcopoco, and I guess he decided not to go. And he was supposed to be at, I think it might have also been Texas Bitcoin Conference. So I've always wanted to talk to Cody in person. But
dude, we had him booked for Bitcoin in the Beltway, and he wasn't able to make it either. So that was a bit of a bummer because he was our headliner for that and kind of canceled.
Is it that he's busy, or is it that he's concerned about
travel officials? I think he was busy, and also he's Cody Wilson, you know. I mean, he doesn't have to go to any of these things, really. I mean, he is kind of, I guess, important enough to cancel the day before he's supposed to speak or whatever. I didn't get too bent out of shape about it because it's just like I assumed he was busy because he's working on so many things, from the Defense Distributed, the dark wallet stuff. I mean, this is all very, very edgy stuff, too.
Have you kept up with the dark wallet?
You know, I haven't as much as I needed to. I haven't had as much time to research as I would have liked, and from what I understand now, it's kind of stalled a little bit because they haven't gotten the funding that they need, which is true for a lot of these really cool projects in the crypto space, is it's hard to get funding. And then there are a lot of other projects that do get a lot of funding and, you know, don't seem to progress as fast. So I think it's a little bit stalled at the moment. So
I'd like to see that. Go ahead, Nima.
The idea is great.
I was going to say, it's amazing that he thinks like a hacker and an engineer because he's in the business of finding things that'll keep the state out of our way.
Yeah.
And I have an idea. We'll talk about it more after this trip to the market.
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space. Space.
Hey, there's some Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now. So there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech as hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
For some reason in this country, and in a bunch of Western world, it's okay to just dodge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created FiendPhone. I'm using FiendPhone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about FiendPhone.
FiendPhone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try FiendPhone right now at FiendPhone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve FiendPhone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to FiendPhone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's FiendPhone.com. FeenPhone.com. Foxtrot, Echo, November, Phone.com.
FiendPhone. I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Nice.
This is really flowing well, though. I really appreciate your time, Nima, that you came on with us.
Yeah,
this is awesome.
I appreciate y'all's as well.
Freedom Fiends. So much truth it hurts.
Ow.
I like that. There's several of those little blipverts, I call them, like that Michael has put together that I really like. That's one of them.
I dig them.
I like the one at the end of the show. The one that's coming up after this segment is probably my favorite. And I've always wanted to ask Michael what he calls it. I'm sure it's from a Bomb song, but I don't know which one.
The ending music that he does?
Yeah.
You know, there's a little drum piece in that I really like to hear every time it comes through. It's like da 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 da. It's just a little thing, and every time that comes through, it just feels good. I like that kind of music.
Feels good.
Yeah.
Somebody needs to invent. I know. I don't really actually have a good idea. It was just a joke idea that I was saying at the last segment. But we need like you know how you have those sonic emitters that keep mice out of your pantry. We need that for statists. Like something a high pitched tone that only cops and politicians can hear. Where when they come to serve their eviction notice because you didn't pay your property taxes, they won't be able to actually get to the door. It'll be too painful.
That's really funny. That would be great.
Yeah, we just have to figure out what it is inside their head that makes them think so differently and find a frequency that will resonate with it.
There you go.
Tyrant frequency. Wow.
Yeah. The tyranny tone. That's what we'll call
it. The tyranny tone. Yes.
I didn't want to let MK get away without asking her, since she is our resident Bitcoin expert. I didn't want to lose the opportunity of talking to her about this. This is something I talked about with Chandler a week ago. There was this thing that hasn't really been a lot in the mainstream media, but it's been mentioned a couple times that a county in Maine, and it also happened to a county in Texas, their entire computer network got zapped by a virus that essentially held the entire network captive and encrypted it. And to get the key to the encryption, you have to pay them a Bitcoin in, extortion. It's a bribery. or not bribery, it's extortion. So it locked up like the sheriff department's computer system and everything. And they figured probably wisely it was probably cheaper to pay the one Bitcoin ransom than to, hire a computer people to come in at $250 an hour or whatever and fix their computers. So they paid it. They paid the Bitcoin. And, of course, the mainstream media is like asking the FBI, who would do this? And the FBI is all like, it's the dirty Russians. Because, whenever you think of hackers, they always want to blame it on Russian hackers. Those are the boogeyman of the internet world.
Or North Koreans.
North Koreans. Yeah, exactly. It's always either North Korean hackers or Russian hackers. Because that's who we're supposed to fear. But I wanted to bring it up because I think it's a hilarious story. And I would like to read stories like that about every sheriff's department.
I would like to see, instead of locking it up, I would like to see them using the resources on their network to mine Bitcoins. So as long as the cop shops are open, they're paying us Bitcoins to get some of our tax money back.
That's a virus.
Yeah, well, that would be hard to do with the computer because they're not really set up to mine Bitcoin. It would possibly blow up the computer, which could also,
that'll work
suit
too.
The end.
Yeah,
right?
I'm not complaining about that.
I would love to see them do this on the IRS or FBI or something, So the ransomware is what it's called. And it sounds a lot. I was reading the article on PCMag.com. It says Maine police pay ransomware demand in Bitcoin. It sounds a lot like something that was going around called Crypto Locker, which would infect your computer and completely encrypt it, and you would have to pay them in Bitcoin to decrypt it. Now, what's interesting is in some of the comments I found were interesting. This is like, where are their backups? Where are their security practices to prevent stuff like this? Or, where did this come from? Who was playing around on the internet, maybe looking at stuff they shouldn't have needed to do, where this popped up and, they were able to be vulnerable. Yep. So this again shows how insecure a lot of these databases are at the government level. And, you can't, if you can't trust them to keep police records, you can't trust them with your insurance information or anything else. So,
yeah, and they want they want all that information on us. They want you to have to. It's going state by state now.
And they can't control it at all. They have no control over it.
They want more and more people to have to log in and set up an account just to get your tax refund back from states. They're doing that now.
Ah.
Crazy
worms.
Stuff. But we're free. We're free in our minds, and we're freedom fiends. Thanks, Nima. Thanks, MK.
Thanks, Ben.
Thank you, MK. Worms.